Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Welcome to Luke's English Podcast and this special series called Marooned with My Music. My castaway today is my mum, Jill Thompson. Born as part of the baby boom generation after World War II, Jill grew up and lived in England during a time of great social change in the latter half of the 20th century. Jill has lived in various parts of the country during her life, including Yorkshire, the Midlands and London, and has had various jobs, including time spent at the BBC, at a primary school, at a university, and now in a charity bookshop. But perhaps her most time-consuming and indeed energy-consuming responsibility has been to bring up two boys and manage a household of three men, her husband and her two sons. While doing all of that, she also studied for a general arts degree with the Open University, adding to her now quite considerable knowledge of history, art, literature and philosophy. She's a voracious reader, a fount of knowledge and wisdom, a loving wife and an amazing mum, and I'm very glad to have her on the programme today. So mum, welcome to Marooned with My Music.
Thank you.
You've grown up surrounded by music. Has it been difficult to choose your eight records?
Well, I decided early on that I would use the theme of remembering all my friends and family through various bits of music. So from a huge range of music that I could have chosen, it was quite nicely honed down by using that way of doing it.
It's a very good approach. I think that's probably going to work out quite nicely.
I hope so.
So you grew up in the 1950s, really sort of born at the, well, you basically grew up in the night. I'm not going to reveal the date of your birth.
You can.
I can. Right. Born in 1949.
Yeah.
Just after the World War II there.
Yeah.
Grew up in the 50s and 60s. First question is, what was it like to be a child of the baby boom generation in that immediate post-war period?
Well, it's hard to say, really, because I've got nothing to compare it with. It was my childhood, and it was a very happy childhood. Looking back on it now, it was quite, you might say, by today's standards, it was quite deprived because there were lots of things we didn't have. But we had a happy time. It was absolutely fine. I enjoyed my childhood.
Did you get a sense that you'd kind of... did you get a sense of what had happened to your parents' generation?
Well, it's strange, really, because even though it had only been a few years since my father returned from the war, it seemed like history. It didn't seem that close to me, even though I knew it was, I suppose, but it didn't feel like that at all.
Did your parents ever talk about World War II?
They talked about it a bit. They talked about the wartime years. My mother talked about what she did during the war. And I knew that my father had been, you know, on active service during the war, and I knew he'd won quite a good medal during the war, and I knew he'd been on the D-Day landings, but that was as much as I knew. When we were kids, he never talked about it. We never really thought to ask either.
Okay, so where did you grow up then?
Well, I was born in Barnsley in Yorkshire, but we only stayed there for a few months. We moved shortly after I was born down to Wolverhampton in, I suppose it was the Black Country.
Wolverhampton in the Black Country, yeah. Which is sort of part of the Midlands.
Yes.
Like, why do they call it the Black Country?
Well, because it was the industrial part during the Victorian era. It was the industrial part of of England, and certainly of that part of England. And I forget who it was who coined the phrase, but it was because all the buildings were turned black because of the soot caused from the industrial processes.
Basically, the air pollution.
Yeah.
The soot that was, you know, flung into the air from the chimneys and the factories.
That's right.
It turned everything black.
It did. And a few years, I don't know, I can remember, I suppose, late 60s maybe, there was quite a program of cleaning buildings. So all the old Victorian buildings were cleaned. And, I was amazed to see this beautiful stone underneath what had been just a black facade.
Right. So what was Wolverhampton like in the 1950s?
Well, I can really only remember my part of Wolverhampton, which was a suburb of Wolverhampton, I suppose. And I can remember we had quite a big back garden. We had quite a big house, but it was didn't have central heating. It didn't have lots of things that houses have today.
Did it have a toilet inside?
It did have a toilet inside, yes. Okay. We were that advanced that we had an indoor bathroom and toilet.
But no central heating?
No central heating.
How did you keep the place warm?
We had coal fires and electric fires and things like that. And it was, as I say, it was quite a large house. And for a while, which I found very interesting, my mother took in theatrical people who had come to the Wolverhampton Rep for a season, and she offered lodgings, theatrical lodgings, to actors and directors and things. So we had lots of people in the house, lots of new different people who were great fun and very interesting. That's one of the main memories I have of Wolverhampton. The other one is the fact that we used to play on the street all the time. There was hardly any traffic, and we just used to have wonderful time running up and down the street.
Okay, that sounds idyllic, almost.
Yes, it does, rather.
Let's start with your first musical choice. So,
okay.
You know the score, you know the situation.
I do.
You're being sent to a desert island,
yeah.
Remote place in the middle of the ocean somewhere.
Yeah.
You've got to choose 8 pieces of music to rescue from the wreckage.
Yes.
What's your first piece of music, then?
Well, like I say, I've chosen the music to kind of remind me of people, and the first one is reminding me of my mum. Mm. And it's a song that she used to sing around the house a lot when we were particularly in Wolverhampton. It's by Irving Berlin, and it's called "I'll Be Loving You Always."
Okay, let's have a little listen to that then. A nice sweet song. So
yeah.
So your mum used to sing that around
she
the house?
Did. Yes, I can remember her just going about her business singing that.
Was it a musical family?
Not particularly. No, and nobody played any instruments. My father had some old 78 RPM records, those great big heavy breakable things.
Large heavy records made of vinyl.
Yes, but no, not made of vinyl. They were made of a much more shattering. I don't know what they were made of, but they broke very easily. If you dropped them, or they would just shatter.
Right.
So they were very. You had to look after them, and they were great big heavy things. And he used to have lots of classical music, particularly Beethoven. Mm. But a lot of the time, we didn't have anything to play them on, so we didn't hear a great deal of music apart from the radio. We used to listen to the radio a lot, particularly children's programs which had a lot of music in them, but they were mainly, now I look back on it, American imports of children's programs, but children's music, like by people like Danny Kaye and Burl Ives and people like that.
Things like "How Much Is That Dog?"
Absolutely.
In the Window.
Yes, and also the English ones were Max Bygraves, things like Gilly Gilly, Austin Pepper, Castanet and Bogan by the Sea or something. I can't remember how it went, but we thought it was great fun. And I'm a pink toothbrush, you're a blue toothbrush.
Right.
And all those things which sound very silly now.
Pretty sort of light-hearted, quite safe family music, often imported from the USA.
Absolutely.
Really. And a lot of the English entertainment kind of took its influences from American entertainment.
Very much so, yeah.
Lots of those family shows that you associate with the 50s in the USA, similar kind of stuff in England, really, I suppose.
How do you mean?
Family entertainment programs, game shows, and light entertainment.
Yes, I suppose so. Although they seem to come... In the early days, in Wolverhampton, we didn't have a television. It was all on the radio. We had a television when we moved to Stafford. Yes, at that time, there were lots of quiz shows and those kinds of family entertainment shows with Michael Miles, Open the Box, or whatever it was called. I can't remember now.
Right, okay.
And Huey Green and people like that.
Okay. It's just kind of giving us an idea of what it was like in the 1950s then. So, you know, no TV, radio. Mm-hmm. It sounds nice, actually.
Mm.
What's your next piece of music?
Well, my next piece of music is to remind me of Dad. And this is Al Bowley, who he is a great fan of. And I think he's dates from the 1930s. He's English. And the one I like is called I'll String Along With You, which has a wonderful ironic lyric, which goes something like, you may not be an angel, for angels are so few, but until the day that one comes along, I'll string along with you.
very romantic.
Yes, but I like it, and I just love Al Bowley, and so does my dad, so... That's what I've chosen to remind me of him.
Okay, so let's listen to Al Bowley, I'll String Along With You.
That's it.
You may not be an angel, 'cause angels are so few. But until the day that one comes along, I'll string along with you. I'm looking for an angel to sing my love song to. And until the day that one comes along, I'll sing my song to you. For every little fault that you have, say I've got three or four. The human little faults you do have just make me love you more and more. You may not be an angel, but still I'm sure you'll do. So until the day that one comes along, I'll spring along with you.
That was Al Bowley, I'll String Along With You. And it turns out he was actually born in South Africa.
Yes, I've just discovered that by Googling him. But he always sounds very English, and he sang with a lot of British dance bands.
I think he was associated with the British dance bands movement.
Yes, so, I think you can say that.
So that's kind of a jolly and humorous song. So your dad then was a bit of a humorist, was he?
Yes, in a quiet sort of way. He was just one of those dads who used to sit in the corner, and every now and then there'd be a dry comment. And he was also a good mimic when he was in the mood.
Yes.
He was good fun in a quiet sort of way.
Okay. So was it a strict upbringing or what was it like then?
I think it probably was a fairly old-fashioned and fairly strict upbringing, yes.
Okay. How about school?
How about it?
Yeah. So my dad told us that, you know, back in those days, you had to take the 11 plus,
that's
which
right.
was an exam that basically separated people into two categories.
Yep.
Either if you passed, you went to a grammar school, mm-hmm. and you ended up probably in, you know, a fairly good sort of job or something like that. If you failed it, then they put you into courses that taught you a trade or something like that.
Vocational education, I suppose you'd call it.
How was the 11 plus for you?
Well, I failed the 11 plus. At the time, we were living in Stafford, and I was going to a convent school.
Mm.
But I failed the 11 plus, but I just stayed on at that school because it was a fee-paying school. You didn't have to, you know, pass 11 plus to stay on.
Okay.
Did that
affect the rest of your life, do you think?
Well, I suppose you could say so, yes, although it's turned out all right in the end.
Yeah.
I don't know, it was good in some ways. I think I had quite a good English grammar education. and that sort of thing. But maths and science, no, not much.
Okay. What were you? Were you a good student, or were you?
No.
Did you misbehave at school?
I didn't misbehave, but I was just lazy. I didn't do things I wasn't interested in, so I didn't do maths. And well, we weren't given the opportunity to do much science, but I hated maths and I didn't really work hard with that.
Mm.
But English, I did enjoy, so that was no problem to me. I was always reading, and I enjoyed English lessons. So.
Okay.
That was okay.
All right. Let's move on to musical choice number three then, Mum.
Okay. Well, I have to remember my brother with this one, my brother Nick. He's a huge Neil Young fan, has been for a long, long time.
Mm.
And I like Neil Young too, but we tend to like different Neil Youngs. Nick likes the loud... What's the group called that he's with?
Crazy Horse.
Crazy. He likes the stuff with Crazy Horse, very electronic and noisy. I prefer the more acoustic, quiet, thoughtful Neil Young. And so I've chosen a very obvious one, really, but I do like it. It's called Harvest Moon.
Okay, so here is Neil Young playing Harvest Moon. That was Neil Young there, Harvest Moon. Lovely yeah. tune.
It is. Lovely.
So you just mentioned your brother there, uh-huh. Nick, younger than you.
Yes. How many years?
3.5 years. Was that like a large gap? Were you close? Or?
I can remember him being born, and I can remember it being rather a strange experience, suddenly having this baby in the house. When we were very young, it was fine. The time when it seemed a big gap was when I was a teenager, becoming a teenager, and he was just an annoying little boy, and he used to get in my way and just be annoying. And so I suppose for about 2 or 3 years, I just found him a pest. But then as we got older, we got very friendly, and we remain that way today.
Okay, that's very good. So did you leave school then at 16?
I left school, I was trying to remember this earlier on. I suppose I must have been about 16. And then I went to the College of Further Education, where I did a secretarial course, and I did a few more O-levels. Before I then went to work, I suppose I was about 18 when I went to work.
I imagine so. Mm. It's normal.
Yeah.
Most people, school finishes at 16. Yes. Then if you did a couple of extra qualifications, then it probably would have taken a couple of years.
That's right.
And then you entered the world of work.
I did. My first job was in an administrative office in the Good Hope Hospital in Sutton Coalfield.
Okay. What were you doing there?
Just general, shorthand typing, secretarial type stuff.
Okay.
Wages, paying people out every year, paying people's wages to them every month.
Yeah.
Or every week it was in those days. And we used to have all the money came in cash once a week. And it would all be emptied out on the table, and we all had to count the money by hand and put it in the envelopes of the people who we were paying. So we had to make sure we put exactly the right amount of money in each envelope.
Right.
So, I mean, it's weird looking back on it now, the idea that you'd pay people like that.
Just cash in hand, sort of.
Cash in hand. Well, not, I mean, they had to pay tax and all that, obviously.
I suppose
you. But all that had been done, and we just had to put the money in the envelopes and then hand it over to the people when they came.
You probably had to produce the pay slips and stuff
as
well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was all written out how much everybody was owed. But it just seems strange, the idea that we were counting piles of coins and putting them into envelopes. Then people would come to the window and we'd give them to them. They'd have to sign for their money.
So this is when? Sort of 1960-something?
60-something, yes. 66, 67. Let's see, 49. Oh, I don't know. I can't work
mid-60s.
It out.
Mid-60s.
Yeah.
And where were you living at the time? Still in Sutton Coldfield?
I was still living at home with my mum and dad.
In the Midlands?
Yes, in Sutton Coldfield.
And so when did you move out then?
Well, my friend Jan and I decided we wanted to leave home. She lived in Stafford, that's where I first met her, and she got a job in Birmingham, and so she and I decided we'd share a flat. We ended up getting a flat in Sutton, not far from my parents, but still, we were living on our own, and it was great fun.
Okay. Now, the 1960s were in England were a time of affluence and renewed positivity after all the problems and the difficulties of the war and the post-war period. In the 1960s, things seemed to change. The Prime Minister famously said, you've never had it so good.
Well, that was in the 1950s.
Was it?
It was, Macmillan, I think, who said that. That was in the 1950s, actually, the end of the 1950s, not the 1960s.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
But basically...
But that was how it was in the 60s, yes.
There was a mood of positivity, bit of affluence. You had a bit of cash in the pockets.
Yeah, I mean, I never had a great deal of money because I didn't earn a great deal. But what I had, I spent, and I used to enjoy spending my money every week on a new dress or a record or something. Very trivial, I was. Yeah.
Then sort of around the mid-60s, late-60s, things seemed to... Seems to change quite a lot. Am I right? I mean, certainly the younger generation, there was this sense of it's difficult to describe really, but there was the whole hippie movement and the Summer of Love and the music that came out. And I mean, in the States, in Europe, there were lots of social problems, some sort of youth revolt and protest against the war and things like that. Mm. And at home in England, certainly the kind of musical movement and a fashion movement, and suddenly young people became incredibly productive and they had a voice of their own and things like that.
It's really strange looking back on it. I mean, looking back on it in historical terms like that, I can see that that was how it was. But living through it, I just thought that was how life was. It never occurred to me that I was living through some sort of revolution, probably because I was not a thoughtful enough person at that time. But it just seemed to me that this is what it was like being a teenager.
Right.
And it was great. I really enjoyed it. I didn't get involved in any protests or, you know, do anything very dramatic, but it was a nice time to live. And I realise now I'm very lucky to have lived through it.
Yeah. Now, obviously, in the sort of early 60s, 62, 63, there was this new phenomenon in the UK, and that was pop groups, and especially the Beatles, who became something quite incredible, an absolute phenomenon, with screaming fans, teenage girls who would chase them around, buy all their records, collect all of the clippings from the newspapers about them and things like that. The phenomenon was known as Beatlemania.
Uh-huh.
What were the fans of the Beatles known as? Was there a name?
Beatlemaniacs.
Beatlemaniacs. Mm. Now, you were a Beatlemaniac.
I certainly was, yes. I absolutely adored them. And I went to see them twice, as I like to tell you.
Yeah.
And they were just wonderful. I loved them. And when I went to see them, I just screamed all the way through. Ridiculous, isn't it? But
what was the appeal, really, of this group of lads from Liverpool?
It's so hard. I mean, I suppose my age, I was just getting to that pubescent age where, you know, young girls tend to fall for people. And they were just so fresh, so funny. I loved them because they were funny and witty and a bit sort of, not rebellious exactly, but they were just... didn't have a great deal of deference and not a great deal of respect for people. And I just loved them. They were just wonderful. And of course, the music was great. So everything about them was just fabulous.
Yeah. Well, it's I can't believe you saw them live twice. It's incredible.
Yeah.
All right, let's have song choice number four.
Well, it's very appropriate, really, because the fourth choice is to remind me of Rick, your dad. And shortly after I met him just before my 21st birthday. And for my birthday, he bought me Abbey Road by the Beatles. So it'll have to be something from Abbey Road. And I think I'm going to choose Here Comes the Sun.
Okay, so this is the Beatles from their last album, Abbey Road, and it's called Here Comes the Sun, written by George Harrison.
Yes, yes, that's another reason why I like it.
He's your favourite Beatle, isn't he?
Oh, he has become my favourite Beatle, yes.
Okay, well, let's have a little listen to that then. So I imagine listening to that sort of takes you back to
that time. It does.
It
takes me right back to that time. It just has such a lovely feel about it. And the atmosphere of the time comes back quite strongly when I hear that.
Okay. So how did you meet my dad then, Rick?
I met him at the BBC. I'd about 6 months before, I'd got a job at the BBC in Birmingham in the newsroom. And one day this young man turned up who'd come from university, and it was Rick, and that's how I met him.
What, you just met him and that's it? I mean, how did it actually happen, I wonder, because Dad didn't go into it. Maybe you can tell us.
Do you want me to tell you the story?
Yes, absolutely.
The first time I saw him, I walked into the newsroom and there he was sitting in the corner reading the newspaper. And so I went into my bit of the newsroom, and the office dragon, I don't know if you can explain that, what an office dragon is.
I imagine the office dragon would be sort of an older woman, quite severe, quite a strict person, maybe in a position of authority, like
that's
a manager
right.
or something like that. The that's office it. Dragon, the scary older woman in a position of authority.
That's it. Well, the office dragon came in and I said to her, "Who's that sitting in the corner in the newsroom?" And she said, "Oh, that's Rick Thompson. Nobody's introduced me, so I haven't spoken to him." And so that was the first time I saw him. But I just gradually got to know him. And in fact, we were both in those days, the BBC used to have an amateur dramatic society. And we put on Things Ain't What They Used To Be, which was an old 1950s British musical. And we were both in that. And that's how we really got to know each other.
What did you think of him when you first met him? Was it love at first sight?
No. I thought he was very big-headed and a bit full of himself.
Okay. And what, did he ask you out then? Is that what happened?
He did, yes. I was in the teleprinter room. Gosh, in those days we didn't have things like faxes or emails or anything. We had this great... We had a room that was full of this teleprinter, which was electronically used to send messages down to the newsroom in London, and you had to type it like a typewriter, a great big clanking thing it was. And I was in there sending a message down to London, and he put his head round the door and said, "Do you want to go to the pictures tonight?" And I said, "No, sorry, I'm already going out." "Oh," he said, and disappeared. And then a couple of weeks later, the phone rang in our office, and one of the other secretaries answered it. And she came over to me and she said, "It's Rick Thompson, and say yes."
So she suggested that you say yes to him.
She insisted that I say yes if he was going to ask me out, which he did. So I said yes.
Okay. And you went to...
And we went to see Paint Your Wagon, which was a film with Clint Eastwood.
An early Clint Eastwood musical.
Yes, strangely enough.
Okay. And so it worked out in the end then, did it?
Eventually it worked out. I decided he wasn't so bad after all.
So after you got to know him, you realised he wasn't such a big-headed guy.
Yes, I did.
You saw a different side of him.
I did, yes. And 2 years later we were married.
Thank goodness for that.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Right, let's have musical choice number 5.
Okay, well, guess who this will remind me of? James and Luke. And when you were about sort of 10, 11, 12 sort of age, a really good age, really enjoyable age, and you used to like Madness. So I've chosen, and we all loved Madness, and I've chosen Our House.
I remember listening to Our House when I was a kid, but let's have a little listen to Our House by Madness, and here it is.
Saying in her sleep, oh, brother's got a date to keep, he can't hang around. Our house in the middle of our street, our house in the middle of our house, it has a crowd. There's always something happening and it's usually quite loud. Our mum, she's so house proud, nothing ever slows her down and a mess is not allowed.
So why that particular song? I mean, we know why you chose Madness, but why that song in particular?
Well, it's just so joyful and it's kind of appropriate, talking about the kids playing up downstairs. And it's just very reminiscent of that time when we lived in Ealing. And, you know, it just reminds me of our house, I suppose.
Yeah. Okay.
And lots of fun and noise and stuff. And yeah.
What was it like having to bring up two boys then?
Well, in the early days, it was great. When you know, up to the age of about 13, you were both charming and lovely, and it was, we had great fun, and it was lovely. It was when the teenage years hit that it wasn't so much fun, and I'm quite glad those days are over. But no, up until teenage years, it was just a delight. It was great fun.
So we were all right then, weren't
we? You weren't bad.
Up until the teenage years. Okay, then. All right, so you've met Rick,
yep.
Who you learnt wasn't such a...
Yeah.
Wasn't so full of himself as you may have first thought.
Yeah.
And so you were living in Birmingham, mm-hmm. but you did move down to London, didn't you, at some point?
We did,
point?
Yeah, yeah. Well, we lived in... we moved down from Birmingham to Marlow, actually, in Buckinghamshire, when Rick got a job at the Television Centre in London.
Just near London there, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it's a kind of suburb of London. And that's where James... Well, it's where you were both born. I was pregnant with James when we moved down there. And then a couple of years later, you were born. And then we moved into Ealing.
West London,
so that we would be closer to the BBC.
Okay. And what do you remember about that time there, living in West London... Living in Ealing.
I just remember we had lots of friends. The school was good. When you went to school, we joined the PTA. We had lots of fun with other members of the PTA. We used to perform in pantomimes. And you used to have lots of local friends who you'd go around and play with. And I had friends as well. It was a really nice time.
Okay. So that's during the 1980s, isn't
it? That's, yeah, sort of from about 1978 to about until 1986.
Yeah, okay. And at that point, Dad was, you know, doing very well at the BBC and so on, worked in as a foreign news editor mm-hmm. and things like that, and with the 9 o'clock news. And then he was given a job back in the Midlands again.
Yeah.
So it was a return to the Midlands.
So we travelled back to the Midlands, but we didn't go back to Sutton Coldfield. We went to Chadwick End, which is a suburb of Solihull, which is a suburb of Birmingham. And it was very different. It wasn't, because in Ealing, it had been a built-up area. With lots of people around, and we went to Chadwick End, which was much more rural with not so many people around. But it was nice for you because you were at that age when you liked to have lots of space. We had a great big garden, and there were lots of children on the lane around about the same age as you, so you did have plenty of people to play with.
Mm. Okay, all right then. shall we hear song choice number 5?
Yes, well, this is kind of for me. Well, the rest of them are for me, I suppose. Having remembered all my family, I I want to choose a Kinks record. And I was going to choose Waterloo Sunset, but I gather Rick chose that.
Yeah, Dad chose that one, yeah.
So this is another one that is a much later one by Ray Davies, I suppose, really, rather than the Kinks. And it's kind of appropriate for me now as an older person. And it's Don't Forget to Dance.
Okay, we'll talk a little bit more about this one in a moment. But let's hear Don't Forget to Dance by Ray Davies, or certainly the Kinks. Here it is.
Out of your window into the night. It could be rain, it could be snow, but you can't feel as cold as what you're feeling inside. And all of your friends are either married, vanished, or just left alone. But that's no reason to just stop living. That's no excuse to just give in to a sad and lonely heart. Don't forget to dance. No, no, no. Don't forget to smile. Don't forget to dance. No, 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 forget it for a while. 'Cause darling, darling, I bet you danced a good one in your time.
So that was the Kinks with Don't Forget to Dance.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned before that that one's for you, really.
Yeah.
Why that song in particular?
Well, I like the Kinks. I always did. And even though they were thought of as boys, as a boys group when I was young, the women like the Beatles and boys like the Kinks. But as I've got older, I like them more and more. And that one in particular is very appropriate for someone of my age, because it's kind of reminding you to not to get too old, not to get too staid, to enjoy your life. And don't forget to dance.
Okay, all right. Now, I think we were talking about the fact that, the whole family had moved to the Midlands, mm-hmm. and stuff like that, and moved into the countryside. Now, after my brother and me, sort of grew up a bit and went off to university, what was that like, first of all, when we just, we left home? Was it night? Was that a pleasant moment where suddenly you had a bit more time and you didn't have to, do all this laundry and all this annoying stuff?
In some ways, yes. Life did get a bit easier and I could do the things I wanted to do more easily. And it was quieter and everything at home. But it was also, it's also very strange when your children leave home. It is, it's bizarre, really. You do find that your life changes a lot. But the older you get, the more you realise that life does go in phases. Kind of like 7 or 10 year phases, and you learn to expect that. And that was another phase. My life of having teenagers in the house all the time had finished that phase, and I was starting a new phase when I had more time for myself.
Okay, let's hear your next musical choice.
My next musical choice is by Bach, and I've chosen the double violin concerto. I think Bach's music is amazing. It is so complex. And so, I mean, people say he's mathematical and logical, which doesn't give you the right impression at all. His music covers every emotion and every feeling, every intellectual thing that you might want to explore. And this one in particular is very complex and wonderful. And I would spend a long time listening to this, I think, because there's so much in it to appreciate and try and understand.
So this is the Bach double violin concerto?
I think that's what it's called. I don't know what number it is, but okay. I'm sure you can find out.
All right, let's have a little listen to that then.
Thank you.
Wow, incredible. It's incredibly complicated and dynamic music.
Yeah, lots to... I mean, you could listen to that loads of times and still be learning about it. It's really, really good.
Mm.
And it's kind of... It fulfills an emotional thing as well.
Yeah, really great. Now, we haven't dealt with the fact that, as well as, you know, obviously bringing up, you know, the your two children and everything, you did go back to education and you took a degree with the Open University, which is a sort of distance learning program.
It's the most wonderful organisation. It was invented in the 60s by Harold Wilson and Barbara Cartland. Barbara.
Not Barbara Cartland. Barbara Cartland.
Barbara Castle.
Barbara Cartland is the author of sort of like cheesy...
Romantic fiction.
Cheesy romantic fiction, but I don't think she also created the Open University.
It was Barbara Castle. And it is a university for people who didn't do much in education when they were younger and have none of the qualifications that would enable you to go to university, a conventional university. So I didn't have any A-levels, for example. But you can apply to the Open University and you can do a degree. I mean, obviously, you don't... It's not easy. You have to go through lots of different phases and pass all sorts of modules and things. But I absolutely loved it. It is the most wonderful invention, the most wonderful organisation. And I loved doing my degree. And I covered all sorts of things. English literature, history, philosophy, art history, history. It was just wonderful. Some of the best years of my life, really.
Really.
And I learned an awful lot, and it's made a lot of difference to my life. And I am evangelical about the Open University.
I remember that you regularly got really good marks for your essays and for your work. Yeah. I mean, you were getting sort of 80% and stuff like that, I think 70-80%, which is very high in terms of like the results you get from essays at degree level. So you clearly got your teeth stuck into it. Was there the subject was I believe mixed arts or
well, in those days when I did it, you did a general arts degree which covered all those subjects. Nowadays, I think you can specify whether you want to do literature or history or philosophy. But I think it was wonderful what I did. I covered lots of areas of the arts and learned an awful lot, and interdisciplinary courses as well. So we had courses like courses on the Enlightenment, which covered philosophy and literature and history, and so we did a lot of French philosophy and as well as English, and it just opened my mind completely. It's really, really good.
Was that something of a sort of renaissance for you?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Was there a particular subject that stood out for you? Was there one area of that degree that you really enjoyed more than others?
Well, I did enjoy the module on the Enlightenment, because I learned so much about that time.
Which period is that then?
It's the... Oh, you're putting me on the spot now. It's the 18th century. It's the age of reason. It's when people turned away from religion to a certain extent, not entirely, of course, and started thinking about exploring life beyond religion. And the art in it is fascinating, and the philosophy, particularly the philosophy. And yeah, it was just that. I think that was my favorite. But I also enjoyed, I did a couple of art history modules, and I just loved that. Learning about history through art is wonderful.
Okay. Fascinating. Let's move on to musical choice number... Is this number...
This is number eight.
Is this number eight? Is it really?
Yeah.
So we've had Irving Berlin, we've had Al Bowley, Neil Young, The Beatles, Madness, The Kinks, Bach, and then this one. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Yeah,
he doesn't believe me, listeners.
No,
he's having to check.
Yeah,
even though
sure.
I told him it was number eight, he didn't believe me. This is what sons are like.
Well, you didn't do a maths degree. it was general arts. You didn't learn to count. Just making sure.
Okay.
Anyway, number eight then.
Number eight is one that I have recently found out about and really enjoy. It's Joe Brown. Joe Brown was a pop star in the early 60s when I was young, and I always enjoyed him. He was a cheeky, happy Cockney person and still is. But this, he is now a virtuoso on the ukulele. And this particular song, I'll See You in My Dreams, is one that he sang accompanied by his ukulele, and he sang it at the end of the concert for George, when after George Harrison died. And it's wonderful. It's very moving and very good. And Rick and I have both discovered the ukulele recently, and we both love it. So I will enjoy it for my own sake, and also because it will remind me of Rick and, you know, everything else.
Okay, so this is Joe Brown.
This is Joe Brown. I'll See You in My Dreams.
Though the days are long, twilight sings a song of the happiness that used to be. Soon my eyes will close, soon I'll find repose, and in dreams you're always near to me. I'll see you in my dreams. Hold you in my dreams. Someone took you out of my arms. Still I feel the thrill of your charms. Lips that once were mine, tender eyes that shine, they will light my way tonight. I'll see you in my dream.
That was Joe Brown with I'll See You in My Dreams, played on the ukulele. And that was a song he played at the concert for George Harrison, a celebration of life and music. And it's particularly appropriate for George because he was such a big fan of the ukulele himself,
yes,
wasn't he?
Yes, he was. He really enjoyed it, and he liked George Formby, and the most unlikely thing that you'd imagine George Harrison to be interested in. But he was excellent on the ukulele, and there are various things on YouTube that you pointed out to me that you can see played by George Harrison.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so that's been... Those are your eight musical choices.
They are, yeah.
But you also have... Well, first of all, I will be giving you the complete works of William Shakespeare, which I'm sure you'll be happy about.
Yeah, I'm very happy. That's really all I need, because Shakespeare knows all about everything. He knows the answer to life, the universe and everything. So anything that you want to think about or read about or whatever, it's in Shakespeare.
Okay.
It's wonderful.
Well, as well as that, and I'm going to give you a choice. You can either have the Oxford English Dictionary or you can have the Bible. Maybe the King James Version.
Yes.
Which one would you like?
Well, strange as it may seem, I think I would prefer the King James Version of the Bible.
Why is that strange?
Well, because I am not religious. I am agnostic or atheist. I'm not sure which.
I think that means you're agnostic. If you're not sure.
I think you're right. Okay, I'm agnostic. So I'm not religious, in other words. But I think as a literary text, it's a fascinating book. Mm. So I'd be quite happy to read my way through it and just enjoy it as a literary text and also enjoy the language and so on. The dictionary, I think I would find less use for, because I would be on an island on my own. Why would I need to expand my vocabulary? I would have no one to speak to.
I don't know if there are, you know, would you need to describe all the different types of sand? I don't know.
Yeah, well, I think, actually, if I had the choice, I mean, Definitely I'd have the Shakespeare. That would be the main one. But I think I'd be quite interested in reading through the Bible.
Okay, but you also get a free choice of your own as a book. Mm-hmm. Which one's that going to be?
Well, that's a bit difficult. I can't quite decide between the Meditations of Marcus Aurelius. Or the Essays of Michel de Montaigne.
I didn't know that you were such a fan of Marcus Aurelius.
Oh, I love Marcus Aurelius. He's wonderful. And he has lots of little axioms, you know, they're sort of two or three line...
bits of truth.
Yes.
Wisdom.
And at times when I have felt tried, he's been very helpful to me. He's wonderful.
Okay.
You should try it.
I will.
Yes. In fact, I should buy you it.
Yes, please.
Buy you a little book of it. He is wonderful. And he is, the Meditations of Marcus Aurelius. Or the Essays of Michel de Montaigne, who I discovered through one of my OU courses. And he, again, is a very wise man. And it's very difficult to choose.
You've got to choose one, I'm afraid. You can't have both.
Well, in that case, perhaps I'll choose the one that's more difficult. And that's Michel de Montaigne.
Okay. So you like a challenge in your reading?
Well, I think I might well do. And I'm stuck on my own on an island. I wouldn't have much else to do. So.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, it's the Montaigne then. Mm-hmm. That's the one you're going to have.
Okay.
Also, luxury item.
Yes.
What's that going to be?
Well, I think if you've got somewhere to cuddle down in the night and try and get a good sleep, or even during the day if you're feeling fed up, it's nice to have a nice, comfortable bed.
Yeah.
To cuddle down into. And I would like a bed, a nice big bed, with a constant supply of very good quality Egyptian cotton sheets and pillowcases.
Done. You can have it.
And I think that would be very comforting on the island.
I'd be glad to provide you with king size.
Yes, king size would be great.
King size bed with a fresh supply of Egyptian cotton sheets and pillowcases.
Yeah.
Sounds lovely.
It does.
Now, by the way, there's been a terrible storm.
Oh.
And I'm afraid that you should have put your records in a more careful place, because they're being washed away at this moment. You will have the chance to rescue just one. Which one will it be? The only record that you can have. Which one's that going to be?
Oh, my God. That's really difficult. I'd forgotten I was going to be asked this question. I think, in the same way that I will choose Michel de Montaigne because he's more difficult, I think I will choose the Bach, because it'll give me something to think about, and I think that's the important. I will need to exercise my brain, and I think that will do the trick, so I'll keep that one.
Okay. Just as a final thought, how do you think you're going to get on this remote island?
Oh, very difficult to say.
You okay on your own?
Yes, I'm quite happy with my own company. But that's for a period of time which I know is going to end at some point. And I think on a desert island, I wouldn't know how long it was going to last. And I think I might get quite... not sure how I'd cope, really.
Okay.
But I think these choices will help me.
I think so. I think so too. And don't worry, I'm sure that you wouldn't be on the island.
You'll make sure they find me, will you?
Well, I mean, the number of people who seem to get washed up on a desert island on the radio these days, there can't be that many desert islands left.
Well, you wouldn't have thought so.
So I'm sure you'll be joined by some kind of celebrity. You'll probably end up sharing the island with, you know, Jack D or Michael McIntyre or something.
Oh, Jack D, please, not Michael McIntyre.
Okay. Mm. All right. Well, thank you very much for being my castaway
on Marooned
with My Music. That's the name of the program.
Yes, yes.
And it's been a pleasure to talk to you, and I'm very glad that I've recorded both you and obviously Dad and my brother James as well.
Mm.
I hope that my listeners have enjoyed listening to these things.
I hope so too. Thank you very much for asking me.
You're welcome. I think that's the end of this show, so just like to say to my audience, thank you very much for listening. But for now, it's time to say goodbye.
Thanks again for listening to Luke's English podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.